Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Kuf Yud. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a mark, the Daf Gemara, for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the mark, the Daf Gemara, before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the top of Daf Kuf Yud at the Mishnah. Before we begin the actual text, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading. Malve atoivea choivoi miloive. We have a lender attempting to collect a debt from a borrower. The haloive moitzi shtar mechira im ta'arich sha'achar halva. The borrower then produces a document, a bill of sale of property, with a date after the date of the loan. Shelechoira nira. It would appear on the surface of things, she'ein chov, that there is no longer any debt. De'im hoyo adayin chov, had there been, if there still was a debt, ha'malve lo hayo moicher lo yisode, the lender wouldn't have sold a field to the borrower, elo goyve chovo. He would have seized the opportunity to simply collect his debt. We now turn to the Mishnah. Hamotzi shtar chov al chavero. A lender produces a bill of debt to collect a debt from a borrower. V'halo, and the other guy, the borrower, hoitzi shemochar loy es hasodeh. The borrower produces a document indicating that this very lender sold him a field. And as we said in our introduction, that would seem to indicate that there is no more any debt. We have a Rashi to look at the top. V'alohotzi shemocha lo yisode, haloi v'hotzi olav, shtar mechirimu ucheres l'shtar alva. The borrower produces a bill of sale dated after the loan. Voimer, and the borrower says, "Shtarcha mezuya fo parua." Whatever you're trying to collect from me, either it's a forged document or it's been paid up already. Shim ha'yisi chayev l'cha. If I was still obligated to you, lo ha'yisa mocher li as asadi, wouldn't have sold a field to me. Shoya l'cha ligvoy says chayevcha. You should have been more interested in collecting the debt, the supposed debt. Mishnah continues. Admoin Oimer. This is, as you can see, the sixth of the seven Admon teachings. The Admon says, Yochol hu shiomar, the borrower can say, as we've explained so far, Ilu hoyisi chayev lucha, had I been indebted to you, hoya lucha loipora eshocha kishemachartel li esasodeh, you should have collected for me the debt when you were selling me the field. The Chachomim Oimrim, the sages who disagree with Admon, and they say, Ze hoya pikeach. This lender was smart, he was shrewd. Shemochar loy es hakarka mipnei shu yochol lemashkenoi. He sold him the property, thereby enabling him, the lender, an opportunity to seize the land as collateral. This might not be clear yet, this Mishnah, and hence we have to look into the Gemara for further clarification. My taimo de Rabbonan, what is the reasoning behind the Chachomim Shita, the opinion of the Chachomim, Shapir Korma Admon Abon seems to be making very good sense. That if a lender is trying to collect a debt, then why is it that the how is it that the borrower is able to demonstrate with a deed that the lender had sold him land instead of simply collecting the debt? You can see we have a geometric form, a house shape, and this is explained under our Mivneh heading. We're highlighting the word Ba'asra. Ba'asra means in a location, in a place. So on the side, under the Mivneh heading, we've written Minhogim Shoinim, different practices, Beseder Bitzua Iska Ois, in the sequence in which deals are concluded, transactions are executed. Ma Kodem, what takes place first? Arichas Hashtar, Otashlum Aksofim. Is it the preparation of the deed, the document, the contract, or the payment of money? And this will make a big difference. We now go to the Gemara. Be'asra diavi zuzi v'hodar kasvi shtora. In places that the practice was first to pay, in other words, first in a sale of property, the money is given up front, and then a document is prepared. Well, kulei alma lo pligi, everyone will agree. Everyone, kulei alma lo pligi, everyone will agree. The motzi amale, under circumstances like that, the borrower can say, you should have grabbed the money that I was paying for the sale and just claim that's the payback of the debt. Why is it that you continue to prepare a title of a bill of sale indicating then, like I say, that the debt that you're claiming has already been paid up? So in that case where the practice is to give the money, advance the money before the preparation of the shtar, everyone agrees that the lova has the upper hand. Ki pligi ba'asro de kasvi shtar v'hoder yavi zuzi. The machlokas between Admon and the Chachomim is in a place where the practice was first to write up the shtar and then to pay the cash. Admon sovar Iboya le lemimsar moida. Admon figures that if the mocher, the lender has any chance, he should have issued a disclaimer. He should have told other people that, I'm going to sell this field now, and I'm going to get paid for it. And my whole purpose in doing this is not it's not an indication that the debt that I am trying to claim has been paid up already, but I'm simply transferring to this borrower a parcel of land, and I'm getting paid for that parcel of land that will now enable me to seize that land back as a means of collecting my debt, call it as collateral for the debt that he still owes me. And Admon says that if he didn't issue this whole disclaimer, the fact remains that if the sale was concluded and it was paid for, it indicates that the payment was for the sale and that really there is no more debt. Rabbonon Savri, the Rabbonon who introduced that the method or the scheme that we just finished describing, whereby the lender provides himself with a means of collateral, the Rabbonon say that is in fact the lender's strong claim. And as far as why didn't he issue the disclaimer, because chavroch chavro islay v'chavro de chavro chavro islay. Which, without translating it literally, it means that word gets around. everyone has friends, and friends tell friends, and word will get to the borrower, and he won't go through with the sale, realizing that he's going to end up losing the land eventually because of the lender's continued claim. So you can't expect the lender to have issued this disclaimer that would have foiled his entire scheme. The Mishnah. Shnayim shotziu shtar choiv ze al ze. A attempts to collect with a bill of collection a debt from B and B from A. Admon Omer, and let's just assume throughout this sugya that these two debts that each one is trying to claim from the other are the same amounts of money. The Gemara will deal with the circumstances. It's very hard to reveal right now what is really going on, but there's quite a bit of information revealed in the Gemara. Well, in the meantime, Admon Omer, Ilu Hoyisi Chayav Lucha, if I was indebted to you, Ketzer Ata Lova Mimeni, then how is it that you're borrowing money from me? In other words, if I was still indebted to you, the money that you would be taking from me wouldn't be a loan that you're taking from me. Simply you're trying to recover your debt, so that if you're borrowing from me, it indicates that whatever I owed you was already paid up. V'chachomim omrim ze goyve shtar choyvoy v'ze goyve shtar chovo. Rabbanan say each one collects their debt as is. We note in Rashi the point that we made earlier. Rashi across from here says ze gove afilu achoiv shove. Even if the amounts are equal, ein oimrim yakiv ze milva shachaver b'shvil milva shilveu ela basin yordan l'nichse kol echad umagvin l'shekenegdo es chovo. We don't say that each one withholds the money that he is chayev to the other, but rather Basin descends upon the properties of these people and sells them off in order to see to it that these debts are paid. So far, it's still quite murky, because the way we're explaining things, we're saying that A is trying to collect $100 from B, and B is trying to collect $100 from A, so that A, in trying to collect from B, will collect $100 from B, and then B, who's trying to collect from A will have to pay back the $100. Like, what have we gained? What's the purpose of all of this? To be continued. The Gemara. Itmar, Shnayim Shotziv Shtar Choiv Ze Al Ze. It would appear to be the same case as the Mishnah. Rav Nachman Omar Ze Goive Veze Goive. The opinion of Rav Nachman seems to reflect the Chachomim. And Rav Sheshes Omar Hafuche Matarto Lomo Li. Elo Ze Oimed B'Shelo Veze Oimed B'Shelo. The approach Rav Sheshes takes is, what's the whole purpose in just exchanging the same amounts of money? Now, the term hafuchi matarta, Rashi explains the meaning of that phrase. It's an analogy. Imagine you're carrying two heavy items, one in your left hand and one in your right hand, and it's the same. Both items have the same weight, the same type of container. Does it make any sense that to switch the package from your right hand to your left hand and from your left hand to your right hand? It's the same amounts. It's not going to ease your burden at all. If it's a different story, if one package weighs 10 pounds and the other weighs 5 pounds, so it's beneficial to you to switch from time to time to make things easier to carry. But where everything else is equal, why would someone do that? And hence, each one just keeps the money that they are that the other is claiming from them. As we go on, we'll continue using the double underline to highlight the expressions Kuli Alma and Ki Pligi, under what circumstances is there agreement and under what circumstances is there disagreement. Let us point out ahead of time that when we speak about collecting debts, if the debtors don't have cash, so collections are made from land. And technically speaking, in general, we usually speak about three grades of land, three types of land. Itis is the most desirable, Beinonis, medium quality, and Ziburis, the poorest quality. It's also generally assumed that people would prefer to have, you know, everything else being equal, a small amount of high quality land than a large amount of low quality land. We're not dealing with discrepancies in actual value that will be paid back, but we're dealing with different qualities of land that would be used to pay back. There's also a general list of, we'll say, a program of collection. That is, in cases of tort damage, so the victim is able to collect from Edis quality land, top quality land. When it comes to collecting debts, loans, those are collected from middle quality land. So far, when we speak about these three qualities of land, the simple approach simply says that there's an objective, regional standard of land. In any given region, there is what's known to be the best quality, the middle quality, and the lowest quality. And that's what we call, in the Gemara terms, you'll see the expression of shomin b'da'alma. Shomin means we make our assessment according to the general standard. There's another way of looking at things, and that has to do with a relative standard, where an individual has several qualities of land, where you can have a situation where his best quality of land would be the worst in terms of the general audience, the general public. But it just so happens that he has even poorer quality land that's worse than the worst, if you can say things like that. That's and in a case like that, this man's best quality land, though it's the equivalent of the poor quality land in general terms, but relative to himself, that's his best quality. That's his idis. So we're just throwing out these ideas as general points to be aware of as we go through the Gemara. So the Gemara continues. The Kulei Alma, Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes will both agree, idis v'idis, where the two parties claiming from each other both have only idis quality lands, or beinonis u'beinonis, ziburis u'ziburis, vadai hafuche matarta hu. That's very clearly a case of hafuche matarta, which would mean there's no point in exchanging the same items from one to the other. The same items in the same quality lands from one to another. Ki pligi, when does the machlokus Rav Nachman Rav Sheshes arise? De is lei lechad beinonis ulechad ziburis. Where one of the parties has beinonis land and the other party has ziburis quality land. Rav Nachman Sovar. We should also point out, by the way, that the Gemara will appear in several stages, and that's what this. We didn't point out that this bow tie shape on the side of the Gemara. We have a nosei mivne heading. These are nisyonos. Attempts lahasbir be'ezin mikre kayim amachloikis bein Rav Nachman v'Rav Sheshes. Under what circumstances do Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes argue b'inyan shnayim shotziu shtar choyv zeh al zeh, with regard to the two that produce bills of collection one against the other? So, as we said, this is stage one. You will notice later that there is the Gemara raises a difficulty with this analysis, which will bring us to stage two. So we say that the machlokas arises when one has beinonis quality land and the other has ziburis quality land. In other words, they're not on equal footing. Rav Nachman Sovar, ze goyve veze goyve. Rav Nachman is of the opinion, as he said before, that each one does collect. Once again, I know that sometimes we may sound repetitive, but there are certain points that are somewhat abstract or obscure, and you should just realize that both have debts of the same market or the same amount, the same objective monetary amount. Each one is trying to claim $100 from the other, for example. The payments are not going to be in cash terms, but rather in land collections. And we said one of the parties has medium quality land, the other one has poor quality land. According to Rav Nachman, in a case like this, there is a point in proceeding with collection. And this is predicated on Rav Nachman's position that land qualities are assessed according to subjective terms. That's b'shelo hein shomen. We'll explain that as we go through the Gemara. Procedurally, what will happen? Osi baal ziburis, the govi le lebeninis, the fellow who has a claim of $100 and currently owns the ziburis land, what he'll do is he'll collect $100 worth of the beninis land from the other fellow. To have a gabe idis, at that point, the beninis quality is for him, this Baal Ziburis, again, subjectively, or relatively speaking, it's Ivis, it's top quality. What did we say about people collecting debts? To what kind of land are they entitled? We could say it this way, in the negative. They're not entitled to top quality land. So what's going to happen now? The Osahu, the fellow who was, we call the original Beninus owner, he's going to now come to collect Osahu v'shokil Ziburis. And he's going to then be taking the Ziburis, which is the less than top quality land, as his collection. So we don't have, you see that there's a point, there is what to be, we'll say there's profit here, profit in quality terms, not in terms of cash terms, but there's in quality terms, there is what to be gained, certainly by the Baal Ziburis says what to gain in this situation. Because at the end of the day, he will be keeping the Beninus, and the Beninus original owner will be getting, as his payment, the Ziburis. The Rav Sheshes, oh my, Rav Sheshes said this whole act is pointless because Rav Sheshes, oh my, hafuche matarta lomali. That's what Rav Sheshes says. Why switch around equal things? Kosovar, his conclusion is based on the premise that Bishel kol odom hein shomin. And when we speak about Idis quality or Beinunis quality, Ziburis quality, we speak about a general standard, not a relative standard. So that when debts are collected, they're collected from, as we mentioned earlier, from Beinunis quality land. And according to Rav Sheshes, Beinunis means in objective terms. Soif, soif, the result is at the end, ki osso hahu, Beinunis, ki osi hahu, when the Beninus guy comes to collect, after the Ziburis man collected the Beninus man is now going to come to collect his debt. It's Beninus Tenafshe Koshokil. He's going to end up taking back his own Beninus. So what was the point of having it given to the Ziburis man when at the end of the day, it'll be given to him and then I'll take it back? The Gemara asks, according to Rav Nachman, that said that there's a point to this, and we described how there is a point to it by having the Baal Ziburis collect the Beinunis. The Gemara the Gemara asks, "Ulu Rav Nachman, my choses de osi Baal Ziburis bereisha." What is it that makes it such that the Baal Ziburis collects at first? Lasi Baal Beinunis Beresha Veligvi Ziburis. Let the Baal Beinonis, the Beinonis owner, come to collect first, and he'll collect the Ziburis. V'lahader v'ligvini halei. And then when the Baal Ziburis comes to collect, once again, he's not entitled to the top quality, and things are, according to Rav Nachman, looked at on in relative terms. So what is going to happen? The Baal Ziburis is going to end up taking back the Ziburis that he had just paid. That's v'lahader v'ligvini halei. And then after the Baal Abaininus initially collected the Ziburis, when the other fellow comes to collect, he'll be taking back the Ziburis. And is that not a case of hafuche matarta? The Gemara says, well, lo tzricha, the case concerning which Rav Nachman does argue is the kadim tav'ei, where the Baal Ziburis, in fact, was the first one to place his claim. The Gemara asks, so what? He's the first one to place his claim. Self-selfki, also the mikvi, when it comes to the actual collections, Bahadi Hadodi Kasu, they're going to be coming together for the actual collections, and you're back to square one. It's, even if the Baal Ziburis had put the claim in first, they're going to be coming together, so that the Baal Beinonis will end up collecting the Ziburis according to Rav Nachman, and I'm paying back the Ziburis. Elo lo tzricha, rather the machlokes Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes is necessary to be taught. The is lay lechad ibis ubeninis, the is lay lechad ziburis. As you can see, this is a new setup. With the markings, you can easily contrast with the first case, where in the previous setup we had one had Beinonis, the other had Ziburis. In this case, one has Edis and Beinonis, and the other one has Ziburis. Rav Nachman holds Bishaloi Hain Shomin. Assessment is made in terms of Edis, Beinonis, Ziburis is made on a relative basis. Umor Sovar Bishel Kol Odom Hain Shomin. And Rav Sheshes says that the standard is the objective regional standard. And therefore, since it's an objective regional standard, it's going to be a case of hafuche matarta. Now, as far as Rav Nachman is concerned, there is what to be gained. And in order to appreciate this, we take a look at the Rashi. You'll notice across from here, there's a starred Rashi, more so b'shalayin shaman. V'lav hafuche matartahu, it's not a case of exchanging equal things. The mimon of shachicha revocha lebaal ziburis. Either way you look at things, the baal ziburis has what to gain. Di'i chavre kodim bereisha v'govi. If the fellow that has idis and ziburis come, idis and beninis, effectively collects first, and he'll be collecting then the ziburis. Iko gabe ididis benis ziburis. There will now be three qualities of lands by that fellow. Umagvi lahech, and then the original baal ziburis will get benonis, so he has what to gain. The iu kodim gavi, if the baal ziburis collects first, and what will he collect? Again, because you're dealing, he won't collect the ididis, he'll collect the benonis. So now you'll have the Baal HaZiburis holding Ziburis and Beinonis. Beinonis, Havyu Gabe, since we're dealing with Rav Nachman, who says things are evaluated subjectively, the Beinonis that this fellow is holding on to right now is Idis, Umagvi L'Chabve, Ziburis, and he will then give to the other fellow the Ziburis. So the original Baal Ziburis, at the end of the day, either way you look at things, is going to end up with Beinonis, so there's what to be gained. Can we continue in the Gemara? Tanan, v'chachomim oimrim, ze goive v'ze goive. We have a Tanaic source, the opinion of the chachomim, that say that each one does a collection. Well, that's not like Rav Sheshes. Tirgumo Rav Nachman aliba Rav Sheshes. Here we have something that's true. Whenever you see this, it's quite dramatic, and that is that you have the, it's called, I refer to it as the honesty of the Talmud. And here you have two opposite or two arguers, two opponents, Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes, and you would think that if you have a Tanaic source that just knocks out your opponent, Rav Nachman would be very happy that Rav Sheshes' point of view is being refuted by the Mishnah. However, the Talmud goes above that. It's interested in honesty, in Torah's emes. And Rav Nachman is figuring like this, that if my opponent is going to be knocked down, it better be with something that you can't wriggle out of. Rav Nachman points out that this isn't a solid question on Rav Sheshes. Rav Nachman explains the Mishnah in such a way that it works out according to or for the benefit of Rav Sheshes. Kagoin Shelova Ze Eliezer Veze Lechomesh. Now we have a new marking and there's a new scheme that develops as you go through the next lines of Gemara. Take a look first at our topic heading. At the Mivneh, that is, the structural note. You'll see that these are Nisyonos, the house marking, Nisyonos Lahasbir, Ha Dikotoni Vachachomam Ze Goive Veze Goive. We're going to be explaining the Chachamim of the Mishnah. And then we will also have another geometric form, a volcano shape. And these indicate Shlavim. These are stages. Lahavin is Beiro Shel Rav Nachman Bamoker Hanal. We're going to first try to explain what Rav Nachman just said. By the way, if you're interested in accessing marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. So we're now interested in understanding the case of the Mishnah that of the Chachamim, the Shitas Chachamim, Zegoive, and not have that as a refutation of Rav Sheshes. So the Rav Nachman explained the Mishnah is talking about a case of one loan is a 10-year loan, and the other is a 5-year loan. Hey chidomi, e lema rishon li eser v'sheni l'chomesh, that Reuven loaned Shimon $100 to be paid back at the end of 10 years. And let's say a year later, Shimon is interested in taking a loan. I should say that Reuven is interested in taking a loan for 5 years. That's Visheni L'chomesh. Behal Lemo Admon, would Admon say under those circumstances that one would have be able to claim Ilu Hoyisi Chayev L'cho Ketzer Ata Loive Mimeni? If I was really indebted to you, so then how is it that you are borrowing from me? Well, that's not a claim. Ha lo mota zimne. Very simply, the time hasn't arrived. If we'll just go over this case again. You have Reuven loaned Shimon a debt for 10 years. That means that Reuven can't collect the debt until 10 years passes. I don't know, after a year later, Reuven needs money, so he might very well need to take a loan from Shimon. And Shimon won't be able to say, if I really owe you money, so what are you borrowing from me? It's very simple. Reuven is borrowing because he's not going to see his $100 for another 10 years. Elo, rather, Rishon L'chomesh V'sheni L'eser. The first one's loan is a loan that was extended for 5 years, and the second loan was a loan for 10 years. Hechidomi, but again, what are the circumstances? E de moto zimne, if the 5 years passed, so that Reuven loaned Shimon $100 for 5 years, and 5 years passed. And then we see Reuven borrowing from Shimon. Well, idamoto zimne, if the 5 years have already passed, my time of the Rabbanon, why did the Rabbanon say that the shtar is a good shtar, the second shtar is a good shtar? Let us just go over that case again. Reuven has a shtar indicating he loaned Shimon money for 5 years. He loaned him $100, and Shimon has a bill of collection to collect from Reuven. If it is true that the 5 years have passed, then how is it that Reuven is attempting to collect a loan from Shimon when you see this very Reuven borrowing money from Shimon, borrowing $100? Why does he need to borrow the $100 if the 5 years have passed? He could collect the money from Shimon as a debt owed to him. Therefore, if Shimon is showing us a document that Reuven borrowed the $100, it must be that Reuven's claim of $100 is a forgery. So why would the Chachomim machshir the bill of collection of the supposed first lender? We continue in the Gemara, V'i delo moto zimne, and if the 5 years have not passed, holo moto zimne, so the chance for Reuven to collect his 5 year loan from Shimon hasn't yet arrived, and that Reuven happens to need money, and the 5 years haven't lapsed yet. Umay taima de Admon, then what would be the basis of explaining Admon, who does not, or I should say, the position taken by Admon that we saw in the name of Rav Sheshes of Hafulche Matarta. Just for the sake of pinpoint accuracy, I don't think there was any need for me to make reference to Rav Sheshes, because right now we're analyzing the Mishnah. We had presented the Shitas Chachomim as a problem for Rav Sheshes. So if we're going to explain the Chachomim with this approach, that the first bill of collection was 5 years and the second bill of collection was for 10 years, whatever explanation we give for the Chachomim, we're going to have to see if that makes sense then in light of what Admon said. Therefore, if we're going to explain the Chachomim saying ze gove veze goive as a function of the first Malve's 5 year loan not having become due yet, so why would Admon disagree with the Chachomim? Lo tsricha, it is necessary to be taught. In other words, this machlokes is necessary under the following circumstances. The also behahu yuma de mishlam chomesh. The 5 year loan is going to be due tomorrow, so that the first malve is coming on the last day, knowing that the next day he would be able to collect, and yet on this last day of the 5 years, he comes to borrow money from the very man that tomorrow he's going to be able to collect that sum of money. Mor sovar ovid inish de Yosef liyome. The Chachomim are of the opinion that people will borrow money, even if it's for one day, so that. And that can happen where there's some kind of very good deal, a great purchase, you don't have any cash, you're only going to get your cash tomorrow, and he doesn't want to pass up on the fleeting deal, so he'll borrow the $100 from the very man that tomorrow he's going to collect the $100, but he'll borrow from him today, the last day of the 5 years, and it'll be a 10-year loan. That's the Chachomim. That's more sovar Ovid Inish the Yosef Liome. Umor sovar Admon would hold Lo Ovid Inish the Yosef Liome. Now I just want to explain again, structurally speaking, all of this is Rav Nachman's presentation of the Mishnah on behalf of Rav Sheshes, and this is how the Mishnah would appear in explaining the Machlokes Chachomim and Admon. So the Chachomim would take the position that a person would borrow for one day, meaning that even though the next day he'll get this amount of cash by collecting the loan that he had extended 5 years previously, but he needs the money today. He can't wait till tomorrow. And Admon will say, people won't do that. Lo ovid inish di yosef liome. People won't do that. And therefore, if you see the malve rishon borrowing from the second guy, that it would indicate that the claim of the second guy is a strong claim, and which stated that if you had a claim against me, so what are you borrowing from me? The Rami Bar Chama Omar. This is a new house marking, so that indicates to us as another approach in explaining the Shitas Chachamim in the Mishnah. Hocha Biyasmi Askinon. Here we're talking about a case of orphans, and they don't have any karka. They didn't inherit karka from their fathers. They have only portables. And the rule says as follows: the yasmi migve gavi yisoimim have the power to collect the loans their father had extended. However, agvuye lo magvinon minaihu. However, they are not collected from, but what would be collected from them? Portables. And there's a rule that portables of Yesaimim are not bound in the payment of their father's debts. So that if you want to understand the Chachamim, say what's the purpose in the collection? The purpose is because the Yesaimim in this case, there was one of the first lender had died, and it's his orphans that are coming to collect. So they'll be able to collect, but they won't be collected from. Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi that we're looking at is the fourth wide line under the Gemara text, toward the end of the line. Biyasmi askinon, shemes echod mehen. One of the two lenders that were featured in the Mishnah had died. Vayesaimin boim v'toivim. And his heirs are coming to collect. Veinlahem karka she shekenegdom goyvishtoro mehen. These Yisraelim don't have any karka that would have enabled the other collector, the other lender, to collect the land. They don't. They simply don't have that. Delo mishtabne taltias milachov. So now we go back to the Gemara text. The Gemara asks, how can Rami Bar Chama say that the Shitas Chachomim is when they say Zeh Goyvav, Zeh Goyvav is a reference to this situation, which stated that the Yisoyman will collect, but they won't be collected from. V'ha Zeh Goyvav, Zeh Goyvav Kotani. It says in the Mishnah that each lender will collect from the other guy. So the Gemara answers on behalf of Rami Bar Chama, ze goyve veze roi ligvois v'ein lo. What it meant, what the Mishnah means, is that one will actually collect, and the other one was a candidate to be collected from, but there is no collection that's going to be made from him in actuality. Omar Rava, shtei tshuvas badov. Rava is not happy with this explanation. Two objections. Number one, chado, de ze goyve veze goyve kotoni. First, you can't deny the simple meaning of the text. It says that each one will collect, not what Rami Bar Chama tried to explain, that the second guy is fit to be collected, fit to collect, but won't be able to. V'oid, and furthermore, ligvinu aro liyasmi, let the Yesoimim, in fact, collect the land. Vilehader v'legvinu minayu kidur Rav Nachman. And then, after the Yesoimim collect the land as payment to the debt owed to their father, that very land will then be transferred back to the other fellow who has a claim against their father. Based on Rav Nachman's teaching. The Yom Rav Nachman, Omar Rabba Bar Avua, Yesoimim Shigovu Karka Bechavas Avihem, Bachov Choser Vegovo Somehen. Yesoimim that collected property because of their debt owed to their father, that very land can then be collected by the one who has a claim against their father. So if that's the case, so then Kashia, why then would you bother saying Zegoveh Zegoveh when in effect it would be a case of Hafuchei Matarta? So this is so-called Kashia. This is left as a difficult point in Rami Bar Chama's explanation of the Mishnah. A new suggestion for explaining the Chachamim in the Mishnah, the Lukma, the Is Lehu, Liasmi Ziburis, the Is Le Ledide Idis Ubaininis. Very similar to an approach we saw earlier, the Yesoimim, who are coming to collect on behalf of the father, they have land, but all the land they have is Ziburis quality land. And the other fellow, with his claim, happens to possess Idis and Baininis. The Asli Yasmi, Govu Baininis, the Yesoimim will come and collect the Baininis quality land, Umagvi Le Ziburis, and then when the original lender, the name is the fellow that remained alive, when he comes to collect his debt, all he'll be able to collect is the Ziburis. The Inami B'Shalkol Odom Hein Shomin, because it is now, even if you say that land is evaluated in objective terms, and if you were to say that, so now the Yesoimim, after collecting the Baininis, they now have, in addition to the Ziburis, they have Baininis. So you would say that they collected Baininis and they're now giving back Baininis. That's not so, because there's a special law concerning Yesoimim. Ha ein nifroyin mi nichse Yesoimim ela mi Ziburis. The rule says that you cannot collect from Yesoimim when you collect debts that their father owed. You collect only from Ziburis quality land. So that, why couldn't you set up and explain the Chachomim who say Zeh Goyve Vezeh Goyve with the Yesoimim circumstance like Rami Bar Chama had suggested? And that's why we're calling this Roman numeral number 2. It's the second Yesoimim explanation. And set it up like this, and there would be value in each side collecting. The Gemara says, "Hani mili," the rule of "Ein nifroim nichsi yisoimim el mizurus." That is true. Hecha delo tofis. That's where you're dealing with land that the original fellow had not been in possession of. Avol hecha de tofas. That put it this way: if the court has to do the distribution, so then then there would be value in this, in the Yesoimim collecting the Baininis, and the other party coming to collect from the Yesoimim, he'll be entitled only to Ziburis. That's where there was no Tofas, where he didn't act on his own, where Basin was going to make the payments. But where someone grabs it, his grabbing is effective. That's hecha de tofas tofas. And therefore, the fellow from whom the Baininis was collected, if he if he grabs back possession of the Beinonis, even though it's from Yesoimim, it stands. His collection stands. Before we move on to the Mishnah, I want to correct a possible mistake that we may have made at the beginning of this Gemara, and that was mentioning back on the second to last narrow line of the Gemara where Rav Sheshis appeared. We might, I might have paralleled Rav Sheshis to Admon in the Mishnah. That would be a mistake. Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshis at the opening of the Gemara were simply arguing about a case which sounded like the opening of the Mishnah, but they have their own machlokes between themselves regarding Shnayim Shotsu Shtar Chov Zeh Al Zeh, where Rav Nachman said a collection is made one to the other, and Rav Sheshis said Hafuche Matarta, and we had explained that in the case, in terms of the Gemara, we had explained that with regard to the issue of a 5-year loan coming due on the next day, would a lender like that, who has the ability to collect his loan tomorrow, would he borrow money the day before? Then it was the last day of that particular loan. So regarding that, we established the machlokes Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshis, and then we had to after then presenting a question on Shitas Rav Sheshis from the Mishnah, we then had to explain the machlokes Tanoim through the eyes of how Rav Sheshis would understand it. And that's what you see in terms of all of these house markings, where attempts to set up the explanation of the Mishnah through the eyes of Rav Sheshis. But as far as the machlokis Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshis is concerned, just to repeat and with greater accuracy, The Gemara's final explanation in explaining their machlokes, we had said that one of the loan collectors had Idis and Beinonis, and the other loan collector had Ziburis. And is there a point in having the collection take place? Well, according to Rav Nachman, yes, there is, because of his opinion that land assessment is made in subjective terms, and Rav Sheshis said no point in doing so. It's hafuche matarta, because land assessment is made in general terms, not in subjective terms. Before we continue with the new Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, the nosei. Hanosei isha Beretz Yisrael, someone who marries a woman in the land of Israel, eino yochol lechufa lavor me eretz leeretz. One cannot force his wife to go from one land region within Eretz Yisrael to another land region. Kagon miyehuda legolio. The Mishnah itself mentions that there are three land regions within Israel. For some, it may be easier to think of three provinces or three states within the land of Israel. And as an example, one cannot force his wife to go from Yehuda to Goliel. Avo l'shanois mekoimo b'soich eretz achas yochol l'chufa. But a change of location within one province, that he can force her. B'tanai shezeh me'ir le'ir. Provided it's simply a maintenance of the same circumstances, like from an ear to an ear. An ear is a medium-sized municipality. Klomar, shemokum hasheni doyme lemokum rishon, where the second location, the point of relocation, is similar to the first point. V'lo me'ir lekrach, but not to force her, let us say, to go from a medium-sized city to a metropolis. Now, the Mishnah. Sholosh harotzos l'nisuin. There are three land regions which have ramifications for marriage, as we explained in our introduction. Yehuda, Ve'ever Hayarden Ve'hagolil. Ein Motzian Me'ir Le'ir Me'krach Le'krach. We don't force movement or change of location from one land region to another. So that when it says here, Ein Motzian Me'ir Le'ir, this could be tricky. That's why we have to emphasize when you're dealing from an ear in one land region to an ear in another land region, or mikrach lekrach, or from one metropolis in a metropolis in one land region to a metropolis in another land region, avo ba'oisa aretz, but within the same province, motzian me'ir le'ir, umikrach lekrach. You can force her to move from one medium-sized city to another within that particular province, or from one metropolis to another. Avol, we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Avol, lo me'ir lekrach, v'lo mikrach le'ir. The Gemara will explain this in detail. Motzin mineveh hara lineveh hayofe. One can force movement from a bad neighborhood to a good neighborhood. But from a nice neighborhood to a bad neighborhood, not so. Rab Shimon Omer, af lo mineveh ra'a lineveh yofeh. He says that you can't force your wife to move from a bad neighborhood to a good neighborhood. B'nei shehaneveh hayofeh bodek. Rashi at the top. Before maybe we read the Rashi, just by way of illustration, speak about a Neveha Yofe as being a location, a neighborhood with densely built houses, very little by way of gardens and parks and airspace. That would be a Neve Hara. Neve Yofe would be the opposite. So Rav Shimon Leal says to go from the squalid type location to an airy, roomy neighborhood, that also you cannot force it because it's bodek. Rashi says at the top, Shanaveh Yofa bodek es haguf. Bodek literally means checks out, but it means it subjects the body to a strain. L'mishabonib ve'ra u'mitoch kach chaloyim olov. It checks out, it puts a strain. In fact, we'll see later in the Gemara this concept of any change from routine puts a strain on the person. The Gemara. Bishlamo mikrach le'ir. I understand the idea of not being allowed to force from going from a large metropolis where all of your needs are supplied to an ear where things are less accessible. The bekrach shchichi komili, in a large city, all of one's needs are easily accessed. And beir lo shchichi komili, and in a medium sized location, so you don't have all of your amenities available. So that's understandable. That which we saw. Lo mikrach le'ir. However, elo mi'ir lekrach maitaimo, from a medium-sized location to a metropolis, why can't that be forced? Isn't that moving up in standard? So the Gemara says, misayale the Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina. Our Mishnah, in effect, supports Rabbi Yossi's teaching. Gemara Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, minayin shi yeshivas krochim kosher. From where do we know that dwelling in large cities is strenuous? It's strenuous. It's not something that's necessarily better. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Vayivorchu am l'chol anoshim hamisnadvim l'sheves b'Yerushalayim." The nation praised those people who volunteered to. Volunteer with a sense of self-sacrifice to dwell in Jerusalem. Jerusalem being an example of a krach, of a large city, and as you can see, it requires an element of altruism and self-sacrifice to live in a place like that. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Shaneve Hayofe Bodek. My Bodek. What do you mean by that? By that term. So in order to appreciate the term, we say Kiddush Shmuel, like in accordance with Shmuel's teaching. The Omer Shmuel, Shinui Veses, Tchilas Choli Meayim. A change in routine. Veses is that something that is characterized by constancy and regularity. So a change in regularity is the beginning of stomach ailments. And we emphasize here, when he speaks about a shinui, and Rashi adds, even l'toivo, even if it's better, for the better. And the Gemara continues, kosuv b'sefer ben sira. Now here there's a very tricky situation. The Gemara quotes a book of, a body of literature called Sefer ben sira, the book of ben sira. There is quite a bit of discussion concerning who was ben sira, at what time did he live. But I can tell you, just from memory, I seem to recall that there is an opinion that he might have even been the son of Yirmiyahu HaNavi. And if that be the case, this ben sira work is an ancient work dating back to the time of the prophets. However, it was not canonized. It wasn't included in the 24 holy books of the Tanakh. It does not have divine sanctity to it. It's not a piece of work that was divinely inspired. There are words of wisdom in the book of Ben Sira, witnessed by the fact that the Gemara cites it from time to time, but it's not of a divine origin. So the Gemara says that it says in Sefer Ben Sira, and then it goes on and quotes a pasuk from Mishlei. Mishlei is from the books of the Tanakh. It's from the sanctified or the canonized holy writings. So what do you mean it says that in Sefer Ben Sira? So if you take note of our markings, the quote from Ben Sira is really that which follows the brackets. So that what in effect happens here is that Ben Sira makes a point based on, it actually continues, he picks up from a posuk in Mishlei, and he adds that which follows after the brackets. So that technically speaking, the Gemara says, Kosov v'sefer ben sira, you skip the brackets, af leilos. Even the night times, and he goes on with some more information, that's from ben sira. But in the meantime, as we read the Gemara straight through with the bracketed section, you have to realize that only after the brackets do you have the actual quote from ben sira. So the it goes as follows. Shmuel said that shinu v'ses t'chiles choling, and Shmuel's point is, even if it's a whatever change in regularity, even if it's going up in quality, it still can bring on indigestion and what is stomach ailments. Kosuv b'sefer ben sira kol yemei oni ra'im. This is a pasuk from Mishlei, as we emphasized, and it says, translated as, all the days of the poor man are with suffering. The Gemara asks, "Voikos Shabbosos v'yomim tovim?" Aren't there the days of Shabbos and holidays when he might be suffering and suffer limitation during the week? But when it comes to Shabbos, even the poor man sets up a nice meal, an enjoyable feast on Shabbos and certainly on Yom Tov. So why would that be included in the Yemei Yoni Royim? What's ra? What's negative about that? The more answers, Kiddush Shmuel, Diomar Shmuel, Shinui Veses Tchilas Chodim Me'ayim. That any change, even if it's a change for the better, if you were used to eating some type of very, very basic type of food substance during the week, maybe a bread with some olives or something very basic, and then comes Shabbos, and you have even the poor man, he has a first course, a second course, maybe a third course, and that's a big change for him. It's a strain on the system. So that he'll pay for that, so to speak, in the course of the day or maybe right afterwards. But that's the beginning of Tchilas Chole Me'ayim, and hence even Shabbos and Yom Tov for the poor man is going to be considered Ra. So Ben Sira Omer Af Leilos, the Pasuk spoke about daytime, Ben Sira says the nighttime also. And further descriptions of the Yemei Oni Royim brought to you by Ben Sira, it says there, Bishval Gagim Gago, cities that are not built on totally flat terrain, but that are built on, let's say, hillsides, the poor man's house will be lowest. That shval means lower or lowest. His roof is lower than everyone else's roof, so that all the water and runoff and drainage that flows from on top runs down onto him. So if anyone's going to be subjected to, let's say, to flooding or to debris in their homes, it's the poor man. Uvmrom harim karmo, and his vineyard, his fields are, when you're dealing again with a hilly environment, his fields and vineyards are going to be on the top of mountains. And now this is explained. These two points are explained. Mimotar gagim ligago, the runoff, the drainage from people's roofs are going to land on his. Ume afar karmo likromim, and all the erosion from fields is going to experience the erosions. Those locations which are higher up are more subject to wind and erosion. So his soil is then blown into other people's fields, leaving his vineyards topsoil bare. Rashi points out, in addition to what I mentioned, topsoil, so Rashi speaks about the fertilizer that he used to fertilize his fields, so all of that will be blown away. Before we continue with the next Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading. Point number one, Hakol Ma'alin Le'eretz Yisrael. In the spirit of the previous Mishnah, the idea of forcing a spouse to move to a different location, the Mishnah here tells us that anyone can force the other one. We'll deal with husband and wife, we'll see more people that are included, but in general, husband, wife, wife, husband can force one another to go from outside of Israel to the land of Israel. And another point that will be discussed has to do with Tashlum Haksuba, the Fimois Eretz Yisrael or Mois Kaputka. The Ksuba payment, when it needs to be paid, is it in accordance with the Eretz Yisrael coinage or in accordance with the Kaputka coinage? Kaputka being another country whose coinage was more valuable, was weightier than the coinage of Eretz Yisrael. So which coinage is used to pay the Ksuba payment? The Mishnah. Hakol Malin Le'Eretz Yisrael Vein Hakol Motzien. Everyone can force the other one to go to Eretz Yisrael, but not the opposite. Hakol Malin Yerushalayim Vein Hakol Motzien. Likewise, with regard to going from a location outside of Jerusalem to Jerusalem, everyone can force that, but not to leave Jerusalem. Echad hu anoshim ve'echad hanoshim, whether it be the men or the women. Nosa isha be'eretz Yisrael, and here we have a double underline a marking, and on the side of the Gemara, you'll notice under the Mivneh heading, Roman numeral number 1 introduces this double underline, which indicates Nosa Eretz Yisrael, the initial marriage, where they got married was in the land of Israel. And under Roman numeral number 2, you see another type of double underlining, highlighting Nosa beKaputka, where the marriage took place in Kaputka. By the way, if you're interested in accessing marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. So the Mishnah continues, Nosa Isha Be'eretz Yisrael, the Girsha Be'eretz Yisrael. If the initial marriage was in Israel and the divorce took place in Israel, and the divorce necessitates a Ksuba payment, so no saying law, Mimos Eretz Yisrael, the Ksuba will be paid in terms of Eretz Yisrael coinage. Nosa Isha Be'eretz Yisrael, the Girsha Be'kaputkia, where the initial marriage was in Israel, but the divorce was in Kaputkya, no same law, Mimos Eretz Yisrael. The payment would be made from based on the Eretz Yisrael coinage. Nasa Isha beKaputkya, veGirsha beEretz Yisrael, where the initial marriage took place in Kaputkya and the divorce in Israel, no same law, Mimos Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, no same law, Mimos Kaputkya. On this point, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel disagrees. Where the initial marriage took place in Kaputkya, you must pay with the higher standard, the more valuable coin standard. Nosa Isha beKaputkya, veGirsha beKaputkya, Nosein Law, Mimos Kaputkya. As we turn to the Gemara, we encounter a new marking. We have a diamond, and on the side, under the Nosei Mivneh heading, we feature the word hakol, and Gemara will ask lasuye mai. When you see, oftentimes the expression of kol or hakol, it's an expression that's coming to include something that may not have been stated explicitly in the Mishnah. So, what is that coming to include? Hakol bereisha, which said hakol malin l'eretz Yisrael, vein hakol motzien, and then we have hakol in the b'seifa, hakol malin Yerushalayim. So now we turn to the Gemara. Hakol Malin, Lasuye Mai. Lasuye, who does that come to include? That everyone goes up to Eretz Yisrael. So Lasuye Avodim. It comes to include the case of slaves. And slaves here mean Eved Ivri. And Rashi explains that if a person had an Eved Ivri, that's a Jewish worker that's bound to work for him, this Eved, this Jewish Eved, has to follow him even against his will. Even if he doesn't want to go, he has to go. The Gemara continues, Ulaman Tani Avodim Behedya, according to those who have in their Mishnah a version that we don't have in our Mishnah, but that state Avodim explicitly, Lasuye Mai. So then, what does the Hakol at the beginning of the Mishnah going to include? As we mentioned before, we include that which is not stated explicitly. So what's there to include? Answer, Lasuye Minevei Hayofe Linevei Hora'ah. The Mishnah that says that one can force others to go to Israel, that means even if one is leaving a luxurious neighborhood outside of Israel to a squalid neighborhood in Eretz Israel. V'ein hakol motzien lasuye mai, that part of the Mishnah, what does the hakol come to include? Answer, lasuye eved sheborach mechutza la'aretz la'aretz. This includes a case of a slave that had run from outside of Israel to Israel. D'amrinon le, we tell the master, zavne hacha v'zil. Your only option is to sell him in Israel and go. Mishum yeshivas Eretz Yisrael, because of the concern of having the land of Israel inhabited and settled, we don't want to have people removed from Eretz Yisrael. Hakol malin Yerushalayim. Lasuye mai, what does that come to include? Lasuye minevei hayofel inevei horah. To include a forced movement from a bad neighborhood, a squalid neighborhood, again, let me correct myself, to include movement from a luxurious neighborhood outside of Jerusalem to a squalid neighborhood within Yerushalayim. V'ein hakol motzien la'asuye mai, what does the hakol word in this part of the Mishnah come to include? La'asuye afilu minevei horah linevei hayofeh. Even if, let's say, someone found a luxurious neighborhood outside of Jerusalem and they currently live in a squalid Jerusalem neighborhood, so even that one cannot force, namely force movement from a squalid neighborhood in Yerushalayim to a luxurious neighborhood but outside of Yerushalayim. Ve'aydi detona reisha ein motzien, since the reisha used the expression of ein motzien means ein motzien from Eretz Yisrael, Tono Seifonami, Ein Motzien. The Seifa also uses the expression of Ein Motzien with regard to Yerushalayim. Now, let us take a look at the Rashi on that. The Aydi Ditana, De'ilu Mishum Minavei Hara Minavei Hayafe. The idea of moving from a bad neighborhood in Yerushalayim to a good neighborhood outside, lo itzrich. I don't need the Mishnah to tell me that. It's true that Gemara said that, but the point is I don't really need that to be said. Kevon de'ashminen, since we were told demalin minavei hayofe linavei hara, we were told already that you can force movement from a luxurious neighborhood outside of Yerushalayim to a squalid neighborhood in Yerushalayim. Kol shekein dein motzien. So all the more so, we're not going to force afilu min hara liyofe, even if it happens to be from a bad in Yerushalayim to a good neighborhood outside Yerushalayim. In other words, where there's a change in status or change in situation, and the change is to the bad, where you're currently in the bad, certainly you're not going to think that you're going to be allowed to force to go from a ra in Yerushalayim to a nice one outside Yerushalayim. So that's why the Gemara says here that the fact that it was taught was only by the way, in other words, for structural style balance in the Mishnah. As we go on, we have another structural note to note, and that's on the side of the Gemara. You can see Roman numerals 1 and 2. The one highlights la'alos, to go up. And the Roman number 2 deals with lotseis, to leave. And in each case, you have the husband putting a claim in and the wife putting a claim in. When the husband is the speaker, so we have a triangle with the point up, and when the wife is the speaker, you see the inverted triangle. And this represents a vikuach bein b'nei hazug b'inyan aliyah v'yitziyah, an argument that develops between the husband and wife regarding either going to or leaving. That will become clear as we see the examples. Tanu Rabbanan, who omer la'alos, vi omer shelo la'alos. The husband wants to go from, outside of Israel to the land of Israel, or from outside Jerusalem to Jerusalem. Vi omer shelo la'alos, and she says, I don't want to go. Chayfen oso la'alos, we force her to go. Vi im lav, and if she remains obstinate, so teitze belo ksubo, she can be divorced and not receive the ksuba. She loses on the ksuba. That goes to show how serious this matter is, how pressing it is to go to the land of Israel, how big a mitzvah it is. It's such a big mitzvah that will even compromise on the woman receiving the ksuba. And by this point in the Masechta, I'm sure everyone realizes how important it is that women are provided with a ksuba. But when it comes to a choice of Eretz Yisrael versus non-Eretz Yisrael, so the Eretz Yisrael consideration is very, very strong. It's also noteworthy that these halachas you will find are quoted in the Sifrei Halacha. You can see this in the Rambam, and you can see this in the Shulchan Aruch as well. The Gemara goes on, he omeres lalos, vu omeres shelo lalos. Now she's the one that wants to go and he doesn't. Kofen oisoi lalos, will tell the man, you have to go. V'im lav, and if he refuses, so then yotzi v'yiten ksuba, so let him divorce his wife, and he'll have to pay the ksuba. It's interesting to note that there's two bonds that are alluded to here. There's the bond between husband and wife, and there's the bond between the Jew and the Holy Land of Israel, which, as I indicated before, might very well have ramifications to this very day. It's not necessarily a Gemara that's dealing with a story of once upon a time in history. But that's already a discussion that's a little bit beyond the purview of the Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shura. But what we're trying to make a point is, at least on the textual level, you see the centrality of Israel, that even though we put so much emphasis and value on the maintenance of a married couple, the responsibility of husband to wife and wife to husband, and hopefully the love between the two, but when it comes to the Jew and the land of Israel, if push comes to pull, the halacha, and hence God's word, it places greater emphasis on the Jew being in his homeland, in the land of Israel, where the Jewish people belong. We continue. He omeres lotzeis, vu omer shelo lotzeis. She wants to leave Eretz Yisrael, and he doesn't. Koifenoi sa shelo lotzeis. We tell her, you've got to stay. V'imav, and if she refuses, teitze b'lo ksuba. She will be divorced and not receive her ksuba. Hu omer lotzeis, v'hi omeres shelo lotzeis. He wants to leave Israel, and she does not. Koifenoi sa shelo lotzeis. We force him not to leave, imlav, and if he still insists, yotzi, v'yitei ksuba, let him divorce the wife that wants to stay in Eretz Yisrael and pay the ksuba. Noso isha v'chulei. Here we're dealing with the section of the Mishnah that dealt with the monies that are used to pay the ksuba. Ha gufa kashya. In looking at the Mishnah and its various sections, we end up with something that appears to be self-contradictory. Katoni, it said in the Reisha, Nosa Isha, Eretz Yisrael, V'girsha B'kaputka, Noisin La, Mimos, Eretz Yisrael, where the marriage took place in Israel, and the divorce, which is associated with the need for paying the ksuba, took place in Kaputya. She receives the lesser quality money, the Eretz Yisrael currency. Alma, Bosor, Shibudo, Azlinon. So we see that in order to determine, if you just had the ratio, just this section, this first part of the Mishnah, you would conclude that money payments are determined by the Shibudo. That means, for our purposes, the place of marriage, where the initial obligation set in, the point of marriage. That's when the initial responsibility and obligation to pay a ksuba sets in. So, from the Reisha, we would go according to the place of marriage. Amal Seifa. Continue reading the Mishnah, and it says, Nosa Isha B'Kaputka V'Girsha Be'eretz Yisrael, where the marriage took place in Kaputka and the divorce in Israel, Nosa Lo Mimos Eretz Yisrael. Here you see payment from the, using the Eretz Yisrael standard, the cheaper, the lesser quality currency. Well, if you have just the Seifa, then you would conclude Amo Basa Gevaina Aslinan. The method of determining what currency is paid is the time of collection, not initial obligation, but time of actual collection, the time of divorce. So that's a contradiction. Is it the Shibuda that determines, or is it the Gevaina that determines? Oma Rabo Mikule Ksuba Shanu Khan. The Mishnah is in accordance with that school of thought that says that ksuba payments, since the husband has to pay out of his pocket, the husband is granted a leniency. We are lenient with regard to ksuba payments. Kosovar ksuba drabonon. This is accepting the position. This assumes the position that ksuba is something that's only rabbinic in nature. We would say it's only a rabbinic obligation as opposed to a doraisa, Torah level obligation. And it being that it's rabbinic, so we can apply leniency wherever they want to apply it. Namely, what we're saying is that no official standard is set determining how the money is to be paid on a consistent basis. Therefore, whatever comes out to be more lenient, for the husband to pay, he is to benefit from that. Rabbi Shimon Amliel lo imer noisein lo mimois kaputyo. Now regarding that case where the marriage took place in Eretz Yisrael and the divorce, let me correct myself, where the marriage took place in Kaputya and the divorce took place outside of Kaputya, took place in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Shmuel says in that case she gets the higher standard. Kosovar Ksuba De'oraisa. Rabbi Shmuel Leal is of the opinion that the basis of Ksuba is from the Torah. Since it's from the Torah, it takes on the characteristic of all debts, all forms of owing money. Person borrows money, so he is now indebted. What is the rule in general with regard to debts that are incurred? You go according to the initial, what's called the shibuda, the initial point of obligation. And hence, Rav Shmuel Leal concludes that where the marriage took place in Kaputya, even though the divorce took place outside, took place in Eretz Yisrael, she's entitled to the higher currency because the Shibuda there was in Kaputya. That's where the obligation was established. Tonu Rabbonan, Hamotzi Shtar Choiv Al Chavero. A person produces a bill of collection to collect money from his friend, Kosov Bo Bovel. It says that the loan took place in Bovel. Smagvem mibos Bovel. The loan is paid back with the Bovel currency. Kosovo Eretz Yisrael. Magveu mimos Eretz Yisrael. Then the Eretz Yisrael currency is used to pay. Kosovo Stam. If a bill of a collection is written but without the land region mentioned in it. Hotzio b'Bovel. Magveu mimos Bovel. If the creditor, the lender, pulls out the document to collect from the borrower in Bovel, so he's paid with Bovel currency. Hotzio b'Eretz Yisrael, magveu mimos Eretz Yisrael. Likewise, if the document is pulled out in Eretz Yisrael, payment is made using the Israeli type currency. Kosuv bo kesef stam. It says, the text would say, 100 pieces of silver, 100 silvers were loaned. It doesn't say, was it the selah type coin, 100 sloyim, or 100 dinarim? A dinar is a quarter of a selah, or 100 punyonim. A punyon is a small fraction of a selah. It doesn't say what. It just says that a loan of kesef was extended. Mashi yirtze loive magbeu. Whatever the loive wants to pay, even the very small coin called isarin or isar. Isar, in the plural, isarin. He can pay back even these very small coins. And then this Tanaic source closes with a closing clause, Mashi enkein b'ksuba, which is not the case regarding the ksuba. Ahe. What is that closing phrase referring to when it says Mashi enkein b'ksuba? Omer of Misharshia, Aresha. It's a phrase that refers to the beginning of the source. Lafuke midrab Shimon Gamliel, Diomar Ksuba Daraisa. This source is to the exclusion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, who says Ksuba is Daraisa. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, the Ksuba payment is going to be based on where the initial marriage took place. This source is saying that it's going to be paid wherever the ksuba is shown, is collected. So that's not like the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, who said that the ksuba payment is determined by the initial place of obligation. Just to go over that point again in a more precise fashion, the resha of this source said Hamotzi Shtar Chov HaChaver, and it said Kosov Bo, and there was written in it, which would indicate the place that the initial obligation was established. So the resha says that whatever the initial place of obligation is stated, that's how the payment is going to be made. So that is as far as a shtar chov. Then the end of this source says, Mashein ein kein besuba, not so in the case of ksuba. Namely, in the case of ksuba, it might have written in the place of initial obligation, but the payment is not going to be made on that basis. And that approach is unlike, is to the exclusion of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Kosuv bo kesef stam, again, a quote from the source we saw just two lines above. If it just says kesef in it, doesn't say what kind of kesef, it doesn't specify the denomination that had been loaned. Whatever the lover wants to pay back, he can pay back. Obviously, he'll want to pay back the least amount. The Gemara asks, v'yemo naska. Maybe he has to pay naska. Naska is a bar of silver. It's not even something minted. Omar Rebelozer, dechsiv be matbea. The case of the shtar chov that is featured in the brisa says in it, me'al, it would say, for example, me'al matbea kesef, 100 silver coins. Now that would exclude the naska suggestion. V'yemo priti, maybe the matbea that's referred to is a priti. Now priti is a very small coin that in general was were copper coins. And what is the suggestion suggesting here? That he should pay, let's say, copper coins. It said, for example, it said me'al. It said 100 priti, correction, it said 100 matbea, and the lover, the borrower would pay back 100 priti. The Rashi says, v'toymar shitein lo nechoshes, 100 copper coins, o kesef shove mea prutos, or silver having the value of 100 prutos. So if 100 prutos equals $2, you would give $2 in silver. Omar of Papa, priti de kaspa lo avdi inchi. Once the shtar mentions in it the word matbea and the word kesef, that excludes the suggestion of priti, because people do not make make out of silver very small coins. Before we continue, we glance at the side. We have a Nosei topic heading, which says Li'olam Yodur Odom Be'eretz Yisrael. I'm sure everyone got this impression earlier from the previous Mishnah. The Mishnah we just learned, that everyone ought to live in the land of Israel. And the Gemara will also mention, Kol Ador B'chutzlaretz Kilu Oved Avodas Kochavim. People who live outside the land of Israel are viewed as if they are idol worshippers. And the Gemara will cite a basis and sources, psukim, for that concept. Tana Rabbanan, Le'olam Yodur Odom Be'eretz Yisrael. A person should always strive and live in the land of Israel. Afilu b'ir sheruba oivdei kechavim, even if that city is a majority idol worshippers. In other words, the excuse being, oh, there are a lot of goyim there. That's not an excuse to not come to Israel. V'al yodur b'chutz la'aretz. And one should not dwell outside of the land of Israel, even in a city that is of a majority Jewish population. Anyone who lives in Israel, he appears as one that has a God. God, we say, means God Almighty, the creator of heaven and earth. V'chol shador b'chutz la'aretz, and anyone who dwells outside of Israel, doima kemi she'ein lo eloka, it creates the impression that he doesn't have a God. Shinemar, the Pasuk, and again here, it's a function of what do the verses say. It says in the Pasuk, Loseis lochem es eretz Kanaan, liyois lochem leilokim. The land of Canaan, which is called the land of Israel, is given to the Jewish people in order for God to be your God. Question, V'chi kol she'eno dor ba'aretz ein lo eloka. Can you say that anyone who doesn't dwell in Israel doesn't have a God? Of course he has a God. Elo lomar loch, kolador b'chutz loretz, anyone who lives outside of Israel, ki'ilu oyved avodes kechovim. It is viewed as if he is an idol worshipper. V'chein b'dovid hu omer, concerning one of the greatest of our people, King David. It says, David himself says, Ki gershuni ayom istapeach benachlas Hashem lemor lech avod Elohim achirim. I was chased out from the land of God, from the inheritance of God, told, go worship other gods. V'chimi amar lo David lech avod Elohim achirim. Who told David to go serve other gods? What the Pasuk is telling us is called Ador B'chutz Loretz, anyone who dwells outside the land of Israel, Ki'ilu Oyved Avodes Kochavim. It is tantamount to idol worship. There is a major issue that is discussed in halachic literature, which of course is way beyond the purview of our Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shurim, is to regarding the level of obligation, the applicability of what we just learned. But suffice it to say, it's a topic that should not be taken lightly, make no assumptions, and everyone should look into the matter and arrive at a truly halachic conclusion. And we have a very dramatic story and give and take that follows. On the side, in introducing the geometric forms that we see now, we have a trapezoid or volcano shape that will appear in alternating directions. The Nosei Mivne heading on the side features the trapezoid or the volcano with the top, the narrow facing upwards. That's Rabbi Zero speaking, and the inverted is Rav Yehuda. And we will see a machlokes b'kol ha'olam mibavel le'eretz Yisrael im oiver ba'aseh. One who leaves Babylonia to in order to come to the land of Israel, is that considered a violation of a positive command? The positive command being remain in Babylonia. So the story starts. Rabbi Zeira havekomishtamit minei de Rav Yehuda. There was a certain point at which Rabbi Zeira, mishtamit is a term meaning to avoid. He didn't want to have a direct contact or confront Rabbi Yehuda. And why was he avoiding Rabbi Yehuda? The ball, the Mesach, there is Israel. Rabbi Zeira wanted to leave Bavel to go to Eretz Yisrael, and Rabbi Yehuda would have protested Rabbi Zeira's plan. So he avoided being the subject of a direct protest of Rabbi Yehuda. The Amar of Yehuda, Kol Ha'olam Mibavel Eretz Yisrael Oiver Ba'aseh, anyone who leaves the land of Babylon for the purpose of going to Israel is in violation of a positive command. Shinemar, there is a pasuk, and we continue at the top of Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. Bovela yuvo v'shama yu ad yoim pokti oisam ne'um Hashem. Translated, they are to go to Bovel, or they are brought to Bovel, and there they shall remain until the day I order them otherwise. Thus saith the Almighty. The Tosfos points out that even though this pasuk is from the book of Yirmiyahu, that is a reference to the called the Golus Rishon, the first exile during the time of the Babylonian destruction of Beis Hamikdash and Eretz Yisrael. So they were to go to Babel. That's what the pasuk says. We know very well that there was a return to the land of Israel during what we call the second, with regard to the second return, the second temple, the second temple period. And that was orchestrated by the Almighty with prophets, great leaders like Ezra, Nehemiah. So once you might say that, well, once this pasuk was stated in the time of the first Golus, they shall remain in Babel, and then we added until God commands otherwise. He commanded otherwise in the second Beis Hamikdash period. So finished. What's Rabbi Yehuda? We should have emphasized is at a time after the second Beis Hamikdash period. So it's a non-starter. So Tosfos says that even though this pasuk is referring to the Golus Rishon, the pasuk is concerned also with the Golus Sheni. That once they are exiled back to Bavel, so they must remain there until the Lord commands otherwise. So that's Rav Yehuda's point. Rav Yehuda was living in Bavel. Rav Yehuda and Rabbi Zera, there was a large Babylonian community, and Rav Yehuda's take on that was that they are to remain there in Babylon until the Almighty says otherwise, even to the extent of not leaving Babylon, Bavel or Babylonia, to go to Eretz Yisrael. For Rabbi Zera, Ahu, B'kli Shoreis K'siv. Rabbi Zera says that pasuk isn't a reference to a command regarding the Jewish people. It rather is a description of the temple vessels that, in the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, the temple vessels were brought to the land of Bavel, and there they shall remain until God orders otherwise. So it's a command. It's not necessarily a command, even, but rather it is a prophecy of Yirmiyahu concerning the temple vessels. And Rashi explains that that's quite likely because the pasuk right before this is dealing with the temple vessels. So in context, it seems to be a very clear reference to the temple vessels. Now, as a result of this, it seems that the Gemara now has Rabbi Yehuda. What does he say in response? So Rabbi Yehuda says, you know, you might have a point about that, but k'siv kro achrina. There's another pasuk from which I derive my shita, my opinion that one is not to leave Babylonia. What does the pasuk say? Hishpati eschem b'nois Yerushalayim b'tzvos b'aylus ha'sodeh v'chulei. I command you, the Jewish people, not to become aroused, not to leave Bavel. For Rabbi Zera, what does Rabbi Zera say about that? Ahu shelo yalu Yisrael b'choma. Rabbi Zera says that the pasuk whereby the Jewish people are sworn not to become aroused and go to Eretz Yisrael, it means as an entire single mass. I am not going to Israel as part of a single entire mass. I'm coming. I want to go to Eretz Israel as an individual. The Rashi at the top says, Shelo yalu b'choyma, yachad b'yad chazaka, all together with force. So that the Jewish people were bound by oath not to rise as an entire nation, leaving the exile together with force. But as we said a moment ago, but as far as an individual is concerned, Rabbi Zera was very enthusiastic in going to Israel. For Yehuda, so what does Rabbi Yehuda say about that? He says, as far as Yalu B'choyma is concerned, Shbati Achrino Ksiv, there's another Shavua that indicates they shall not arise b'choyma, and we've noted along the way the psukim, the first pasuk, this pasuk that was quoted by Rav Yehuda, regarding the prohibition of going to Eretz Yisrael from Bavel was Shir HaShir in Perek Beis Posuk Zayin. Rav Yudah says, not only do you have Perek Beis Posuk Zayin, but you also have Perek Gimel Posuk He. So that, as far as Rav Yudah is concerned, you have two psukim. One, a warning to the individual, and the other, a warning to the mass. For Rabbi Zera, well, what does Rabbi Zera say about that second Hishvati posuk? Hahu, mi boy alev, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. I need that additional posuk as part of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina's teaching. Di Omar, Shloisha Shavuos Halolu Loma. This is a reference to three psukim in Shir HaShirim, Perek Beis Posuk Zayin, Perek Gimel Posuk Hei, Perek Hei Posuk Ches, these oaths that we saw already, Hishbati, we saw Hishbati Eschem Benoit Yerushalayim, we saw references to these psukim already. Here there are a total of three in the meantime. What do I need them for? Achas, Shelo Yalu Yisrael Bechoma. Bear in mind, this is Rabbi Zera speaking. He says that one is a warning against a mass forceful return to Israel. The Achas Shishbia Kodesh Baruch Hu Es Yisrael Shelo Yimrudu Beumo Yisraelam. And one is that the Jewish people were bound not to rebel against the nations of the world. But rather, in the state of exile, they should remain cooperative citizens. And v'achas shishbi hakodesh baruch hu es oiv dekechavim shal yishtabdu bohen b'Yisrael yosher midai. And a third shvua is that it's upon the goyim not to subdue the Jews, enslave the Jews, subjugate the Jews too much. Certainly, we can, with the hindsight of history, we can see that the idol worshippers, the goyim, have certainly violated that shvua many, many, many times. For Rav Yehuda, well, up till this point, then, according to Rabbi Zera, the shvuas psukim that Rav Yehuda cited are already used up. So, what does Rav Yehuda say? Im to'iru v'im to'iru. That in the Shavuos Pasuk, you have actually two Shavuos. The double expression, im to'iru v'im to'iru, then accounts for an additional Shavuah. And that will include the prohibition of the individual from coming to Eretz Yisrael from Babylonia. For Rabbi Zera, who was interested in coming to Eretz Yisrael and, yes, leaving Babylonia to Eretz Yisrael, mi boyale l'cheder Rebbe Levi. We'll say that now that we're accounting for an additional shvua, Rabbi Zera says, I have an accounting for that in accordance with Rabbi Levi's teaching. The Omar sheish shvuos halalu lama. There are actually six shvuos. And now this is a function of the we mentioned the double shvua that's mentioned in one of the psukim in Toirim Ta'uru. So you can note, we have a little note with a double star on the side of the Gemara, that in Perek Beis Posuk Zayin and Perek Gimel Posuk Hei, you have there Im To'iru Im Ta'uru. So that right there, you've got four shvuas accounted for. So that's, as we said, that's you have the Im To'iru Im To'uru, and you've got also Perek, and that's in addition to the Hishbati expression. So it would seem then that the Hishbati, maybe I should correct myself that. It's not necessarily the double expression in Im Toru Im Toru that accounts for the extra shvuas, but the fact that it says Im Toru Im Toru in each one of the psukim that were mentioned in addition to the Hishbati. Whatever the case is, you will be able to account for four Shavuos if you look at it as that, thusly. And then you have Perek He, Posuk Ches, which is an additional Shavuah, and Perek Ches, Posuk Dalid, an additional Shavuah. So if you use that as your method of accounting, you will account for six Shavuos. It struck me now, maybe it's just a detail, but the psukim that mentioned Hishbati and Im Toyu Im Toru, the double expression Im Toyu Im Toru, each one, Im Toiru, is connected with Hishbati, and Im Toru is connected with Hishbati. So that the double expression that you find in two psukim gets you to four Shavuos. And as we said, in addition to that, the two additional ones getting you to a total of six. So now, six shvuos appear. Six oaths appear. Rabbi Zera continues. Tlosa Hani Damoran. The three are those that we already mentioned, that Rabbi Zera already accounted for three of the six. Enoch, the additional oath by which the Jewish people are bound, is number four, Shelo Yigalu Es HaKetz. That means prophets that lived amongst the Jewish people shall not reveal to them when the actual end of days is going to be. Number five, V'shelo Yirachaku Es HaKetz. We should not distance, cause the end to be distanced. The Rashi on the second line from the top says, "V'shili rachus aketz ba'avonam, through sinning." Lishnachrinu shelo yidchaku garsinon. Instead of yirachaku, a dalid appears instead of the resh. Loshen dochak shelo yarbu b'tachnunim al kach yosimidai. A fascinating point that the Jewish people are exhorted not to pray too hard, to overdo it prayer-wise for the final redemption. Very interesting idea. Next, number six, V'shelo yigalu hasoid le'ovdei kechavim. The Jewish people are warned not to reveal the secret to the Gentiles. What is that a reference to? So the two pshatim in Rashi. One has to do with the lunar calculations. It's called Soto Ibor. And another explanation is the teaching of the reasons behind the mitzvahs of the Torah. Even the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, the seven Noahide laws which the Gentiles are obligated to observe, the depth of them, the reasons behind them, that is not to be revealed to them. There's a basic isur in the teaching of Torah to Oivdei Kechavim, to idol worshippers. The Pasuk said, "Bitzvois o ba'ailois hasodeh." We saw this as quoted already on the fourth line from the top. Omar Reb Elazar, Omar Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu liYisrael, Imatem mekaymin es haShvuah mutav. If you observe the oaths, then fine. V'im lav, if you violate the Shvuos, ani Matir es besarchem, I will declare unowned, I will leave for as open gain your flesh. Kitzvoi saiz hasoda, like these are wild animals that people hunt. In other words, if you violate my shvuos, then you will in effect be a hunted people. Amir Tzashem, of course, we will be zeche to see the great redemption soon in our days. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.